Blog Talk Radio.
Is capitalism bad for the environment? That's coming up next, right here on The Parker J. Cole Show. Stay tuned. Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Parker J. Cole Show. I am so excited that you're here with me today. We're going to be talking about one of the hottest topics that's going on right now in our world today, and that is conservation of the environment, political commentary, as well as economic development. There's so much to this topic. So glad that Dr. Cal Beisner is here with us again this time to talk about, is capitalism bad for the environment? We're going to be talking to him in just a few moments. So if you want to weigh on the conversation, you know you can. Simply call in at 929-477-1965. Again, 929-477-1965. And this month, if you make a donation of any amount to the Cornwall Alliance, of which Dr. Beisner is the head of, you will get a free copy of his book, Is Capitalism Bad for the Environment? We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Dr. Cal Beisner and answering the question, is capitalism bad for the environment? Stay tuned.
Authors, are you looking for a new way to get your book in the hands of new audience of targeted buyers? Then a virtual book tour is for you. Right now, virtual book tours is an excellent opportunity for you to introduce your book and who you are as an author. Launching your book is very important. A virtual book tour will connect you with readers. We at WNL, we specialize in book tours, book blasts, radio tours, cover reveals, and Facebook chat. Promoting and marketing your book is what we do. Online publicity, the exposure and the publicity is what you need. Let us help you reach new readers and a new audience. We take care of everything so you don't have to. We set up the tour for you. We connect you with bloggers to advertise your book by way of interviews, guest posts, and reviews. If you are an author of a newly published book, have an upcoming release, or just want to give a previously published book new life, a virtual book tour is your answer. Check our tours out at www.wnlbooktours.com. Visit me on Facebook. I am the owner, Paulette Harper.
Hi, I'm Sherry with the Lemonade Stand. As the weather warms, your risk of exposure to mosquito and tick-borne illnesses increases. Please keep these tips in mind when outdoors. Wear light-colored clothing, apply repellent, avoid high grassy areas, check yourself after returning, and remove any attached ticks promptly, only with a tick removal device or tweezers, avoiding any home remedies. This has been a community service announcement courtesy of the Lemonade Stand.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Parker J. Cole Show on WPJC 104.5. Again, we're talking about, is capitalism bad for the environment? I think this is a very important question that we need to discuss because we do want to make sure that we are being good stewards of the earth that the Lord gave us. But is a different economic system the tool to use to go about doing that? Or is capitalism the best tool? Or is there some other tool possibly? Well, let's talk all about it with my good friend, guest co-host and contributor today, Dr. Cal Beisner. Dr. Beisner, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing great, Parker. Thanks very much. And thanks so much for having me back on the program. I always enjoy it with you.
It's a wonderful opportunity for us to reintroduce you to those who don't know who you are and then to introduce those who have never, who've heard you before, rather, to say. And so with that, there was just a lot of talk about this. When I put this out there on my Facebook and on my various social media outlets, lots of talk, lots of discussion started happening, which is a good thing because we don't talk about these very difficult issues and these very complex, nuanced issues. We don't know where the lines of divide are. We don't know fact from fiction. We don't know truth from a lie, or even misunderstanding versus evidence. We don't know where it leads to. So I'm glad that we're having the discussion. But what I would like you to do is just quickly introduce yourself to those who may not have heard of you before we get started about the topic.
Well, I am the founder and national spokesman of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. People who'd like to learn more about us can go to cornwallalliance.org. That's cornwallalliance.org online. We are a network of evangelical Christian scholars, almost 70 in the network. About a third are natural scientists, about a third are economists and policy experts, and about a third are theologians and other sorts of religious leaders. And we have a threefold mission. It is to educate the public and policymakers regarding three things. First, biblical earth stewardship, or how we can best fulfill the mandate, the instruction that God gave to humankind in Genesis 1:28, that we are to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and everything that moves on the face of the earth. So that would be biblical earth stewardship. And, of course, we need to understand what that really means, because I think a lot of people have some serious misunderstandings of it in all sorts of different directions. The second is economic development for the very poor around the world. I think primarily in terms of people in sub-Saharan Africa or parts of Asia, Latin America, and Oceania, whose income per day is the equivalent of perhaps $1.50 to $2. This is certainly nothing that is common at all in America or the West, as we tend to think of it. And so we want to look at what are the things that really cause entire societies to rise and stay out of poverty and therefore avoid the great risks to human health and well-being that come with poverty. And then the third thing that we want to educate the public and policymakers about is the gospel of Jesus Christ, the fact that by faith in Christ, who gave his life on the cross for sinners to pay the penalty for our sin in our place, we can be reconciled to God, and then we can begin to learn his ways of understanding this world and even of using this world, of being good stewards of it. You know, we can't properly fulfill the dominion mandate of Genesis 1:28 or the call to care for the poor and to overcome poverty. We can't do those unless we understand the world and human beings as God intended us to. And so we need to be reconciled to him. So we think that that the preaching of the gospel, that making disciples of all nations, teaching them to obey all things that God has commanded us, this is crucial to both our environmental stewardship and our conquest of poverty.
Hello? Dr. Bison, my question is this. Sorry about that. My question is this. We should probably define some terms really quickly. What do we mean by capitalism, and what do we mean by socialism, and then what do we mean by democratic socialism?
Okay, great questions. And, yeah, definitions are very important. And unfortunately, on all three of these terms, there's an awfully wide broad usage of the terms that goes far beyond technical definitions. Capitalism is essentially the notion that that an economy functions best when private property owners are making the primary decisions about what to make, for whom, at what costs, using what resources. Socialism is essentially the notion that that an economy functions best when the decisions about what to make, for whom, at what cost, using what resources, are made instead by political office holders, whether they are elected or appointed. made by the state, so to speak. And then democratic socialism is specifically that form of socialism that says, and we want democratic votes to have a large say in how the state determines what gets done, for whom, using what resources, at what costs. So those are the three sort of more technical definitions, but you know, associated with those, for instance, with capitalism, we tend to emphasize private property rights, entrepreneurship, free trade, limited government, the rule of law, tend to look toward small government instead of very large, expansive government. We tend to think that taxation ought to be kept fairly low so that property stays in the hands of private individuals and so on. With socialism, we tend to expect large government. We tend to expect rules being made with specific outcomes in mind for specific people or groups of people, rather than rules to be applied identically to all people everywhere in all circumstances. And then with democratic socialism, of course, what you've got is more activity of the people in deciding who's going to be in charge of that socialistic economic governance. So it's also possible for us essentially to distinguish them as capitalism tends to value liberty above security, and socialism tends to value security above liberty. Benjamin Franklin, of course, one of America's founders, is famously said something to the effect of, whoever would surrender a little liberty for some safety or security deserves neither liberty nor security. anyway, those are some basic ideas behind the terms.
So a lot of people associate a certain type of attitude when it comes to either of these economic ideologies. A number of our commenters made a point to say that capitalism is a tool, that greed is the problem. How would you respond to that conclusion?
Well, you know, some people think that somehow or other capitalists are more greedy than socialists, and that capitalism somehow or other approves of greed. I don't think that's the case. I mean, people are people, regardless of their political ideologies. And so greed is a sin, and sin is an equal opportunity employer. It affects people in it affects people who are capitalists and people who are socialists. It affects people who live in capitalist societies and people who live in socialist societies. And so the really interesting question about greed having to do with economic systems is, what economic system does a better job of channeling the kind of behavior that tends to come with greed in such a way as to serve more people, capitalism or socialism? And I think, looking at history, that the answer is pretty clear. Because here's the deal. Since socialism wants government to determine who makes what, for whom, at what costs, using what resources, whereas capitalism wants individuals to determine what they make, for whom, at what cost, using what resources, right? Socialism, therefore, puts the power of coercion, the power of violence, of force, in the hands of those who make those decisions. Whereas capitalism says, well, you're not allowed as an individual to use force on anybody. So if I want you to build a particular product for me, in capitalism, I can only get you to do that if I promise to do something for you that you want so much that you're willing to build something for me. Whereas in socialism, if you want me to build something for you, and you get control of the state can order me to build it for you, and if I refuse, it can arrest me and put me in jail or fine me or something like that. Essentially, Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell, two wonderful economists, have tended to say, look, capitalism is the economy of peaceful exchange, and socialism is the economy of violent exchange. Now, that's putting it pretty starkly, and the two are not exactly that opposite each other, but that's certainly they certainly tend toward those opposite ends of the spectrum.
One of the comments that we received, and we did receive a number of comments, is this. And I'm trying to see which one to kind of jumpstart our topic here. Not that you haven't done a great job already. So I'll go to Frank from DeRoche, British Columbia. Frank, thank you so much for weighing in on the conversation. Frank says, humanity can't have infinite economic growth on a finite planet without eventually bumping up against the biosphere. And that was from Frank in British Columbia. Thank you so much for weighing in. So usually when we have these discussions, at the heart of the discussion is the sincere desire to make sure we take care of our planet. That is truly the sincere desire. But when it comes to these various ideologies, it's almost as if the desire to take care of the planet gets pushed to the back burner as much as making sure that my particular political ideology is the one you need to submit yourself to. How would you say, how do we focus the conversation? Because it is a volatile topic. A lot of people are very divided on it. So how do we focus the conversation where we can agree and disagree without turning into a virulent flinging match?
Yeah, that's great. And his question is great, or his comment, I think, is great. And I think the first thing I'd say is that all economic systems, that is, systems in which we're trying to answer the question, who makes what for whom at what cost using what resources, right? All economic systems face the challenge of wondering what do we do about the apparent limits of the resources around us? Might we be bumping up against the finite limits? Might we be running out of certain resources? How do we prevent running out of resources, if indeed that is a potential problem, right? All economic systems face that problem. And so they all have to try to address it. And I would argue, and I think that we have really strong historical evidence for this, that economic systems that put the ownership and control of property more in the hands of private individuals do a better job of ensuring that resources are not wasted than do economic systems that put the control and ownership of resources in the hands of the state, of political decision makers. And there's part of the reason for that is that political decision makers, of course, always want to assure their own reelection, right?
Okay.
But the way that they do that is by giving handouts, by doing favors for voting blocks, right? But private individuals, they want to use resources in an efficient way so as to keep their costs down while their production is up. And so there's, when we look at the history of efficiency of use of resources, between the more socialistic and the more capitalistic countries, there's not even a contest there. Waste is much more prevalent in the more socialistic countries than in the more capitalistic countries. So assuming that the fear of running out of resources is a legitimate fear, when we ask which system does the better, I think the answer is fairly clear there. But then there's this next thing that we need to look at, and that is, are we in fact in danger of running out of resources? And I think this is something that is very, very counterintuitive. But after we get to understand it, we can think, oh, well, that makes sense. It starts with realizing that nothing is a resource until human beings have figured out helpful ways to use it. Before we figured out how to refine oil into a fuel to provide power, or into plastics and fertilizers and all sorts of other things, we now get tens of thousands of different products from oil that we get out of the ground. And it's certainly one of the most valuable, most widely used substances on the entire planet. Until we figured out how to use oil practically, beneficially, it was really a nuisance. Wherever it happened to bubble up out of the ground, it was just a problem. You couldn't farm where it bubbled up. You couldn't build a house where it bubbled up. It was a mess, right? So we have to figure out how to use things before they become resources. And the better we get at doing more and more with less and less of a given substance, the longer we make that resource last. And so this is why, for example, with oil, I'm just using that as one example, but the same thing applies to everything that we take out of the earth, whether it's minerals or plants or animals. This explains why the long-term price trend of oil and of every other thing that we take out of the earth is downward once you adjust for inflation. And even more important, the long-term trend of the relationship between the price of oil or any other resource we take out of the earth and the price of human labor is that those resources are getting cheaper and cheaper in terms of human labor. The reason for that is that human beings, given their God-given minds and their bodies, right, are capable of making more resources than we consume. And the more of us there are, the better we work together to generate more and more innovations so that we make more and more out of less and less. So as our population grows, we actually make resources become, and here's the counterintuitive part of it, resources become less scarce, not more, over time, even though we're using them. But the reason for that is that we make them, and we make them faster than we use them. This is why, for example, again, with oil, starting in the 1890s, the U.S. Geological Survey began making predictions of how soon we would run out of oil in America. And typically, the predictions were, oh, we would run out of oil in, 15 to 20 years. Those were the typical predictions for about the first 40 or 50 years. And then they got tired of losing, of missing out so badly all the time, so they started pushing it off a little bit more. But what's fascinating is that every time a prediction is made about how soon we're going to run out of oil, right, by the time that date comes, we have used far more oil than was expected in the prediction. And we now have more known reserves of oil than we did before the prediction was made. And that's because we keep finding new ways of discovering where oil is. We kind of keep finding better ways of extracting it from the ground. We keep finding more efficient ways of refining it and using it. That's right, really quite extraordinary. But the same thing applies to every other thing we take out of Earth. And that's because God made us in His image to be creative and productive as He is.
And for those of you listening to the sound of my voice, we are talking to Dr. Cal Beisner. He is the head of the Cornwall Alliance, which has a threefold ministry, which is biblical earth stewardship, economic development for the poor, and spreading the good news about the gospel of Jesus Christ. If you want to know more about this organization, simply go to cornwallalliance.org. And for this month, you still have a couple of days. Well, one day, actually. You still have one day. Any donation of any amount, you will receive a free copy of Dr. Beisner's small booklet, Is Capitalism bad for the environment. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We will be continuing to answer your questions and comments that you sent in before the broadcast. But if you want to weigh in via phone, call in 929-477-1965. Again, 929-477-1965. We'll be right back after these messages.
Question: if you write a book, everybody will rush out to buy it. Obvious answer: no. If you were a celebrity or if you had a huge marketing budget, then maybe you can get a lot of exposure for your book. Another solution would be to check out JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com is a promotion and marketing service with access to over 1/3 of a million followers on Twitter. JoeyTweets.com has 3 packages available to fit any budget. That's JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com. Get some serious exposure for your books.
Let's get cooking. Yeti Cooks is a place where you will find recipe ideas, tutorials, and tips, clean eating, classic favorites, meal plans, nutrition information, and a lot more. You can find instructional videos or download recipes found on YetiCooks.com. Follow my cooking chronicles on Instagram and Twitter. Get quarterly newsletters, latest updates on trending food culture at YetiCooks.com. Let's get cooking.
Jesus said, heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. Freely you received, freely give. Listen to our internet radio station at touchofgodradio.org, where you will find out your true identity in Christ. You can use the light that is within you to replace the darkness in this world. Go into all the world today with touchofgodradio.org.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Parker J. Cole Show on WPJC 104.5. Today we're talking about, is capitalism bad for the environment? We're talking about that today with Dr. Cal Beisner. He is the head of the Cornwall Alliance, and you can find out more information about their organization by going to cornwallalliance.org. You can also follow them on Twitter at Cornwall Stewart. They have a threefold part of their ministry: promoting biblical earth stewardship, economic development for the poor, and spreading the good news about the gospel of Jesus Christ. And once again, Dr. Beisner, thank you so much for being with us on the show, for just opening yourself to really talking about this very sensitive, very important issue. It's a very important issue because there's so much at stake when we talk about this. We're not just talking about just the earth, the people's ideas about their place in the planet, you know, in God's, and what he has us doing for our lives. There's so much involved with that. So what I want to do, before I read a couple of more comments, we do have a caller calling in from St. Louis. Caller, how are you doing today?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Well, with Vought phones, you can be any place in the world using a recognizable zip code. But I wanted to say capitalism has been good for the environment. I'm going to list some ways. Being a capitalist, being able to earn and hire people that's earning a wage and salary, and they're able to have homes where they have a sewage system that the sewage is being processed before it's being emitted to the environment. They're able to have electric or gas for cooking rather than cutting down trees or burning charcoal. They're able to have transportation on roads that are paved, and also a way to, you know, reclaim rainwater and channel it into places where it can be used for the good. And even when you go into developing countries as a capitalist, one of the first things that you make development improvements on is electricity, because you can't do anything further if you don't have electricity. Providing electricity for the inhabitants, they're able to have a communication through TV and radio where they can receive the gospel in a more broad and concentrated spectrum. So just those 4 or 5 ways, I think I show where it's good for the environment.
Dr. Beisner, please respond.
I think that's very, very sharp, and it's a point that I try to make in my booklet, is capitalism bad for the environment? You know, the fact is, of course, there are paved roads in socialist countries. There are houses. There are sewage systems and so on. You know, socialist countries have those things. So it's not only capitalism that's been able to produce them. The real question is, which one produces more of them at lower cost? That is, which system is better at lifting large numbers of people out of poverty and keeping them out of poverty and providing for them such things as houses and roads and sewage systems and purified water and all of those different things? And, you know, from the 1920s to the 1950s, it was really a pretty interesting question. Would socialistic or, you know, more centrally planned economies do better at making a lot of wealth for a lot of people and getting it in the hands of lots of people, or would capitalistic free market more free economies do better? By the 1960s and early 1970s, the answer to that question historically was increasingly obvious. The more free market, more capitalistic countries produced more wealth and got it into the hands of more people. And the reason that this is so important to the question, is capitalism bad for the environment, is something that I think our caller recognized in what he said. It is that a clean, healthful, beautiful environment is a costly good. And as with all other costly goods, wealthier people can afford more of them than poorer people can. So when we ask the question, who can better afford a clean, healthful, beautiful environment, the rich or the poor? The answer to that is pretty obvious. And then when we realize that free market capitalistic countries are more prone to producing lots of richer people and socialistic countries are less capable of doing that, then we immediately recognize why it is that capitalism is, you know, one of the reasons why capitalism is so much better at taking good care of the environment than socialism. And I actually spend some pages in the early parts of my booklet just looking at the environmental disasters in socialistic countries. There is nothing in capitalistic countries that can begin to compare with some of the disasters in socialist countries. And that's partly because the socialistic countries are poorer in general, but it's also because in the socialistic countries, nobody has a particular incentive to take care of property because it doesn't belong to anybody in particular. And that drives to another simple, you know, fairly simple point, a point that we can raise by asking a question. Why is it that you encounter graffiti in public bathrooms and not in your bathroom at home? Well, it's because the public bathrooms sort of belongs to the public, which really means it belongs to everybody, but frankly, what belongs to everybody belongs to nobody. Nobody has any incentive to take care of it. But you have incentive to take care of your own bathroom walls so that, A, they're pleasant to be in, and B, you have the prospect of good resale value when you sell your home someday. In socialistic countries, those incentives are greatly reduced. So I think your caller was really sharp on this. Capitalism, because it produces more wealth and gets it into more people's hands, tends to have better environmental track record than socialism. And, you know, when we think about a clean, healthful, beautiful environment as a costly good, more affordable to the wealthy than to the poor, that's really very easy to demonstrate. Again, simple question. If you want to see the dirtiest countries in the world, the ones with the most, you know, with the most impure water, where if you drink it you can get dysentery, with the worst air pollution, with the most chemical pollutions all over, do you go to the poorest countries of the world or to the richest countries of the world? And if you want to see the dirtiest sections of your city, do you go to the poorest sections or the wealthiest sections? I think all of us know the answer to each of those questions. And it's absolutely obvious. And since capitalism is better at making people wealthier, it follows that capitalism is better at promoting a clean, healthful, beautiful environment.
And I want to thank our caller for calling in and just really weighing on the conversation. You could tell our caller did have an understanding of capitalism and some of, and what it can do for the environment and for people. So it's like a win-win situation. But we did get some people who felt as if capitalism was bad for the environment. And I'm also thankful for their disagreement because it gives us an opportunity to discuss the issue. And Rachel says, yes, because capitalism thrives on mindless consumerism, a pointless, unnecessary, and quickly obsolete / disposable products. Then she goes on to say, I'm not suggesting communism is a good alternative because I don't know what a good alternative would be, but our capitalist, consumerist culture is out of hand and creating waste we can't properly dispose of or recycle. And then another person said, and I'm not sure whether he agrees that capitalism is the problem, but he does make this observation. This is Sean from Jacksonville, Florida. He says, it's interesting that in America, capitalism and Christianity are viewed as somehow being linked. They're not. Jesus never talked about the superiority of one economic system over another, but he certainly did talk about redistribution of wealth, and he puts in parentheses, Sermon on the Mount. So go ahead, let's talk about this. You know, does Christ talk about redistribution of wealth at Sermon on the Mount? And, you know, what Sean says here. And then Rachel says, yes, it is, because it thrives on mindless, pointless, and unnecessary disposable products, as well as mindless consumerism. Tell us about your thoughts on that.
Well, let's start with the second commenter. And what I would do first is to say that I have dealt with the question of whether Jesus requires redistribution of wealth in the Sermon on the Mount or anywhere else in another booklet of mine called Social Justice versus Biblical Justice, How Good Intentions Undermine Justice and Gospel. And for that commenter, as well as for any of your listeners or any people who come to your website and read about this, we will offer through the Cornwall Alliance, again, if they'll make a donation of any size and ask for it, ask for Social Justice versus Biblical Justice, we'll send a free copy of that booklet. 100% of their donation will be tax deductible. The one passage that some people appeal to as Jesus requiring redistribution of wealth is his encounter with the rich young man, and he told this young man, sell what you have and give to the poor. And the young man went away sorrowful because he was very rich. And Jesus said, it's very difficult. In fact, it's more difficult for the rich to enter heaven than it is for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. Now, Jesus was speaking there to a particular person, and he put his finger on a particular problem. This young man had put his trust in his riches, and he was unwilling to give those up for the sake of following Jesus. But that was not something universal. And in the very next chapter, this is in Luke, in the very next chapter, we get Jesus' encounter with Zacchaeus, who was a tax collector who had defrauded many people. And Jesus encounters him, and Zacchaeus says to Jesus, I want to be your follower, and I will repay everyone what I have defrauded him of twice over, and I'll give half my goods to the poor. Now, Jesus had told the rich young ruler to give all of his goods to the poor. But this man offered half. And Jesus said, this man is a child of Abraham. Now that means he was a believer. He was a member of Christ's kingdom. And so giving away everything wasn't required. So anyway, in my booklet, is Social Justice versus Biblical Justice, I deal with the primary biblical passages that some people use to argue that the Bible requires redistribution of wealth. I think that it does not, and we need to study those passages carefully. Now, the prior comment was from someone who argues that capitalism is bad because it thrives on mindless consumerism, the mindless production of new disposable products that nobody really needs. I would say two things about that. The first is that consumerism is, again, a human attitude. It's not something about a system of economy. It's a human attitude. And human beings have that regardless of where they live. Pretty much all people would like to have more of some things than what they have. And I think that's it can be sinful, but it can also not be sinful. And the issue is not whether a given economic system promotes that. It's whether we learn spiritually to live with contentment because we know God as the one who is the provider of all that we need. You know, Jesus says, you cannot serve both God and money. And then he tells us, you know, don't worry about what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat, or where you're going to live, any of these things. Your Father knows, your Heavenly Father knows that you need these things. You know, we need to trust God for these things. So capitalism, frankly, doesn't depend on consumerism any more than socialism does. And consumerism, the greed that we talked about earlier, is a human trait. It's not a systematic trait. But there is this important point to make, and that is that the definition of capitalism is not the production of great amounts of unneeded stuff. It's the question, who makes the decisions about what gets made, for whom, at what costs, using what resources? Okay? And the question, you know, the options are, are those decisions going to be made primarily by individuals or primarily by governments? And what we find is that when they're made by individuals, they tend to lift far more people out of poverty, and they tend to be far more efficient with the use of resources. That is, they get more out of less. So they are less prone to create waste, and they're less prone to make large amounts of pollution. They're better able to prevent pollution and to clean it up where it's happened. In socialistic societies, those decisions are made by governments, and they tend to be less efficient. They get less out of the resources that they use, and so they're more prone to run out of resources, and they're more prone to make more pollution. Is there a perfect economy? No. We live in a fallen world. We live in a world full of sinners. We live in a world that has been cursed by God so that it resists our efforts to control it, whereas without sin it would not resist them. So our issue is really, you know, which does the better, not which one is perfect. Neither one is perfect.
You know, I was thinking about what you said, Dr. Beisner, where you said people generally want more. If you have less, you want more. And there's nothing wrong with that in the scheme of things. And I'm reminded of a well-known author. She made the comment, and ever since I've heard it several months ago, I just think about it off and on. She said this, I'd rather be rich and miserable than poor and miserable. And when she said that, I thought to myself, well, I can't really find fault with that, because I would love to wipe my tears with an extra spare $100 bill. You know what I mean? I don't want to be poor and miserable, because I don't have to. I could go, you know, Francis, prepare to college in the south of France. You know, I'm going to mourn there. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
But you
well,
know,
and the fact is that the fact is too that if you are poor, you're more likely to be miserable than if you are wealthier. Now, but we need to be careful about how we think about that too.
Sure, for
because
sure.
Because a lot of research has shown that the happiness level, the satisfaction with life level in poor countries is pretty comparable to the satisfaction with life level in wealthy countries. But what's really interesting is that within those poor countries, the wealthier people tend to be more satisfied with life, tend to be more happy than the poorer people. And within the wealthy countries, the wealthier people tend to be happier and more satisfied with life than the poorer country, poorer people. So it's very interesting that there seems to be a sort of a comparative thing. That is, we think of ourselves in comparison with others. And as I see other people around me thriving more, I'm not saying that this is a good thing, all right?
Mm-hmm.
It tends
mm-hmm.
to provoke in me some envy, some jealousy, some feeling of self-pity. Now, that's not a good thing, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, what we can recognize is that there are a lot of measures on which, frankly, to be wealthy is far better for us than to be poor. In terms
mm-hmm.
of nutrition, in terms of health care, in terms of safe, access to safe drinking water and clean air to breathe and proper sewage sanitation, all kinds of different things. Wealthier people tend to have better well-being than poorer people have, and so we can't just ignore the contribution of wealth to human well-being.
That's a very valid point that you make there, Dr. Beisner. And I get the context of what she was saying. I totally get the context. But some people were very put off by the comment. And, of course, it comes to people say, well, if I am a billionaire, like someone who's a billionaire, a person who is not a billionaire would say, well, no one needs that much money. And I've heard that several times. And I kind of think to myself, if you legitimately worked really hard to get where you are, to get to be comfortable, why shouldn't you reap the rewards of your hard work? We're not talking about people who are drug lords who do that. We're not talking about people who do something horrific to get money. We're not talking about that. We're talking about if you honestly create a product, create a service, provide something that serves people, because that's what capitalism is, a vehicle that does that. You know, what can I provide to someone that I can make money from, be profitable, and provide a service to? If I can use my profession, Dr. Beisner, I'm a writer. I write romances.
Mm-hmm.
I sell my sweet romances to my readers. They read it. They want to be entertained. I give them something. They give me something back. Okay, that's something I provided. No one has to, if they don't want to read it, they don't have to read it. You know what I mean? So I think it's that system, the economic system, helps you to create, what can I do to serve someone else? Whether it's entertainment, whether it's helping people come out of poverty, like you were saying with Cornwall Alliance, whether it's providing, drinking water for everyone, which everyone should have. You'd be surprised how many countries don't have it. They can't even drink the water. It's what can I do to get, to funnel that greed, I guess that's the right word, to funnel that greed.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting topic, and I'm hoping that those of you listening to the sound of my voice, I hope you're enjoying the conversation along with us as well. I want to read another comment we received. Like I said, we have several, and in the interest of time, I'm going to go to one of the longer ones. One of the longer ones here, and he basically says, I will argue, this is Jeremy from Dothan, Alabama, who is a longtime supporter of the show. Jeremy says, I will argue that while capitalism can be harmful for the environment, it can also be equally beneficial, more so. Capitalism runs on return on investment. As long as the potential to profit remains, capitalism has the ability to use any opportunity to its advantage. The dynamic can be seen in animal conservation. Rather than demanding that all animals be allowed to live and consume as they see fit, hunters will cull the herd, harvesting older animals so that resources are more available for the younger, stronger members of the herd. When considering the environment, it's easy to consider the resources as infinite because the environment is so much bigger than the capitalist. However, if the capitalist sees the resources as finite, the capitalist will act to preserve profitability, bolstering and replenishing resources or the ability to produce them as necessary, because when the resources are gone, the capitalist's ability to profit is gone. And that's from Jeremy from Dothan, Alabama. I think Jeremy has some wonderful insights into this thing, because he makes note that if we continue to provide something to keep our resources going, like you were saying, then you find yourself using more or less of that resource and still profiting from it. And if I say it wrong, Dr. Beisner, please correct me.
No, I think that's fine, and he makes a really good point. You know, one way for us to illustrate that again, to get to something very simple. I don't think anybody is worried about broiler chickens going extinct, right? And yet we slaughter about 10 billion of them every year.
Tasty.
Just in the United
mm-hmm.
States, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, why aren't
mm-hmm.
we worried about their going extinct when we slaughter so many? It's because we also raise them. We have well-functioning hen houses where eggs are laid and they're fertilized and they're protected and they grow into chickens, and we do that, right? Now, we're
mm-hmm.
worried about rhinoceros going extinct.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because we don't raise rhinoceros.
No.
And so, you know, the point is that when you give someone property rights in a valuable resource, he has an incentive to sustain that resource and even to enlarge it. Whereas when nobody's got property rights in a resource, then there's no incentive to sustain it. There's no incentive to enlarge it. In fact, there's more incentive just to consume it. And that's
mm-hmm.
why some wildlife are endangered, whereas domestically farmed life is not. And so what we found, for example, with regard to elephants in Africa was when governments banned their harvest completely, the herds began to suffer greatly because the tribes saw the elephants basically as giant rats that would get
mm-hmm.
into their farm fields and trample and consume everything. But when instead
mm-hmm.
the governments then began giving actual property rights to the elephants, the tribes began to cultivate them, and they came back from on the verge of extinction. So a capitalist free market economy that spreads private property rights is more likely to avoid species extinction. It's more likely to have efficient use of resources, to sustain that use of resources over a long period, than an economy that is centrally planned, more socialistic.
I'm going to read a couple more comments because I do want to make sure our supporters do get their word in. Lewis from Greenville, Texas says, look at what the Soviets did to the environment during their 75 years of benighted rule. Look at what China has done to its once beautiful rivers. Their environmental impact has been far more negative than the capitalistic West. Lewis, thank you so much for joining in the conversation. And then Ricky from Beaverton, Oregon says, individual, small business capitalism, working together towards the best solution for everyone, is good. Corporate capitalism, looking out for number one, trying to make the most money in the most efficient way possible, is not. Ricky, thank you so much for weighing in. And then Mary asked this question, Mary from Bixby, Oklahoma. She says, Dr. Beisner, would Dr. Beisner address the fact that the word capitalism was invented by Karl Marx and isn't even the word we should be using to describe what system we ought to have? Can they come up with a new way to express biblical work ethic, serving the customer, success in providing for yourself and employees or partners, cooperative ventures, and teaching others to have the right view of work? And that was from Mary in Bixby, Oklahoma. Now, I know there's a lot I threw at you very quickly because of the time we have left on our show, but what are some of your thoughts as you kind of sift through some of the information I just shared with you?
Yeah, well, let's start with that last point about the coining of the term capitalism, and yes, it was by Karl Marx, and
mm-hmm.
it was a fairly derogatory term,
mm-hmm.
and it's certainly not the term that the adherents of what has also been called classical liberalism, were understood by their system. Marx termed it capitalism because he thought that the pursuit of wealth was the driving factor. Classical liberalism said, no, it's not the pursuit of wealth that is the driving factor. It is the pursuit of freedom. It is the maximization of freedom. And so those are very different perspectives on what's involved. And this is why, again, as I said early on in the program, capitalism is that system that says that the decisions about who makes what for whom, using what resources at what prices, are made primarily by private individuals, not demanded by a coercive state. Whereas socialism is the system that says that those decisions are to be made by the state and forced upon private individuals. The one is more for liberty, the other is more against liberty. So, yeah, I mean, we in many ways, I think, sort of hamper ourselves when we bow to Marx's appellation of capitalism. That's why I also call it free market economy or classical liberalism. The word liberalism, by the way, coming from the Latin word liber, to be free, liber, liberty, not what we nowadays call liberalism in America, which tends to be far more like socialism than like real liberty.
There's a tangent to what you said about socialism being run by governments. What is interesting is, and I said this several shows ago, I can't remember when, we talked about how many people who are in government don't have children. This is a tangent topic. They don't have children. And because they don't have children, they enact or erect policies that they have no personal stake in. And so if you have people who are in government, who are part of the state, who don't have children, they'll be affected by the policies. Why should they care about how these policies will affect you? Because they don't have a personal stake in it. Why should they care about how it affects you? So that's just a tangent topic I just wanted to drop into the conversation, because as I was listening to you say that, usually you want to make sure that the decisions you make, you say, how will this affect my child, my grandson, my nephew, whoever? How will that affect them? Because the future generations are going to be the one to take on the brunt of the policies we erect today. And that's something to think about in this discussion. We got a couple of more. We're getting real close to the end of our show here, but I got to make sure our listeners who support us at least have their voices be heard. Laura in Columbine, Colorado says, well, the bottom line of all corporations is to make as much money as profitable. This is required for them by law, actually. Their CEOs and CFOs can be fired if they do not accomplish this end for the benefit of their shareholders. This is why we need valuable products for the masses to buy and use. Otherwise, the only way to curb the bottom line for corporations is for states and the federal government to require them to develop environmentally friendly products and systems, or to incentivize these things, or to impose legislation that creates an equal liability for not doing the right thing by the earth. So I think you have to coach the question within that framework, or everyone else is in the dark. Laura, thank you so much for weighing in. Paul says that he was responding to, personally to me, Dr. Beisner, and he says, my guess is at the society that we live in, whereby the two are even linked in any kind of seriousness. And he's talking about, like, claiming capitalism and greed, for example, as if there were no greedy Soviet commissars, to paraphrase the late economist Milton Friedman. And that was from Paul. And then I think you got one more. She said, I'm going to actually cut her comment down here. Quite honestly, this is from Marilyn in British Columbia. She said, quite honestly, I'm getting tired of today's population pitting economic systems against stewardship. Most are doing it in favor of convincing the masses that somehow socialism or communism will be better. It seems those pushing this agenda have forgotten current events going on in other nations around them who have wholeheartedly drunk the Kool-Aid, let alone recent history in our parents' age of how communism destroyed the economies of nations, and some of those stories didn't end until the late 80s. And that was from Maryland, British Columbia. I think I got everybody. If I didn't get you, I'm so sorry. We will return to this a little bit later. But you could tell, Dr. Beisner, this was a topic that a lot of people were talking about. They definitely had opinions about, and I'm so glad you took time to be with us on the show to discuss this. So what are some of your final thoughts as we get ready to close our show today? What are some of your final thoughts, and tell us some more about how we can get a copy of Is Capitalism Bad for the Environment?
Well, I'll start with that last thing there.
Sure.
Either for Is Capitalism Bad for the Environment, or for the other booklet that I mentioned, Social Justice versus Biblical Justice, all people need to do is go to cornwallalliance.org and scroll down and click on the donate button and fill out a donation. And in the comments section, just ask for one or the other of those. Is capitalism bad for the environment or social justice versus biblical justice? And we'll be glad to send it free, and the donation will be 100% tax deductible. And I would just sort of make my own closing comments this way. We are called by the Lord to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. And that is a difficult thing. Frankly, it requires a lot of study. And I'm perfectly happy to see that there is lots of discussion about this, but there's a lot of disagreement about this, because you know, the Bible also tells us that iron sharpens iron, and we are supposed to be prompting each other to think more, to learn more, and that's a good thing. So I welcome the kinds of disagreements that we had here. And in fact, when people go to CornwallAlliance.org, if they get either one of these booklets and they read them, I'm happy to entertain their questions about them afterward. They would just write to us at stewards@cornwallalliance.org. That's stewards@cornwallalliance.org.
You know, Dr. Feisner, thank you as always for being with us on the show. I just enjoy your commentary. I enjoy the logical, reasonable way that you approach this very sensitive, very important issue. I'm so glad that Cornwall Alliance exists to disseminate the information. And for those of us who are Christians who definitely want to do right by the earth that God gave us, I'm glad that Cornwall Alliance stands in the gap for us, because you make some of these high-sounding words very simple for us to understand, because sometimes we think, oh, this is just a scientist debate. And no, it's not a scientist debate. It's all of us debate. We all have a responsibility to be informed about what's going on. I'm glad that you and Cornwall Alliance is doing that for us. So thank you, thank you. Thank you so much again for being with us today.
Well, thank you again, Parker, and God bless you and all of your work.
We want to thank Dr. Feisner once again for joining us on the show. If you want to get a copy of Is Capitalism Bad for the Environment, as well as the book about the biblical justice versus social justice, definitely go to cornwallalliance.org to get your copy. I mean, wait, let me back up, because I may have this wrong. Let me see, Dr. Feisner. Dr. Feisner, just once again, tell them how they get a copy of that. I know I'm going to mess it up. Tell them how they get a copy of that again. Sure.
Go to cornwallalliance.org, click on the donate button that you'll find down near the bottom of the home page, and then fill out your donation online. And for whatever amount you give, we will give a free copy of either Is Capitalism Bad for the Environment or Social Justice versus Biblical Justice. But you do need to ask for it. We won't just send it automatically. Just be sure that you ask for it. And your gift will be 100% tax deductible.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bison. Thanks for even jump off just right away. I knew I was going to get that wrong, because there's so much information going on. So thank you. So for those of you listening, you know how to get your copy of this booklet and the other booklet. So make sure you go to cornwallalliance.org. I always enjoy having the fellows at Cornwall Alliance on the show, because they do help us understand these various topics. And make sure you go to cornwallalliance.org. If you want to look at research papers, documents, articles, blogs, make sure you go there and make sure you are informed about this for yourself. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of the Parker J. Cole Show. You have a wonderful, blessed day, and God bless.